Hi, I'm Aaron.
And this is Paul.
This is Wayne.
And I'm Andrew.
Welcome to a very exciting return to Star Wars with Aaron and Polly. But before we get into it, guys, I went to the Door last night.
Is that the local strip club, the Door?
It is the Door.
Was your front door to just yell at the kids on your lawn?
Well, actually, it was to grab my dinner from the Uber driver. And, I was grabbing my Chinese, and I see this car right behind the Uber driver's car. And I'm like, what the hell's going on there? But I didn't give it any thought, and I closed the door. So I go and I put dinner in the kitchen. My wife comes in. We're starting to make our plates, and the doorbell rings. I'm like, well, what the hell? So I go to the front door and open it up, and it is this woman who announces that she is from the neighborhood association and wanted to introduce herself and give me some information about the neighborhood association and yada yada yada. And I'm like, I'd love to have this conversation with you right now, but we're about to sit down to dinner, so can we do this some other time? And she wouldn't leave my front porch, and I'm just like, seriously, we're sitting down to dinner right now. And all I'm thinking about is, I just spent a ridiculous amount of money to have Uber deliver my dinner, and it's getting cold. So I'm not hearing a thing she's saying. And I finally said, okay, well, I'm going to go have dinner. I really made a great first impression on the block captain of the neighborhood association. Just saying.
Is that like a homeowners association or?
We don't have an HOA. This is just an association of neighbors that, crime okay. watch together and all that kind of fun stuff.
Good. Then you can tell them to go fuck off.
Exactly. So that was my evening last night. Very exciting.
That's awful. I mean, I was.
Was your food cold? Did you have to wave a gun at her?
Aaron? Did you have to reheat the food?
I had to reheat.
No. Yeah,
I feel like sending her the bill.
Did you? Was it seafood?
No, it was I had the orange chicken.
The thing about DoorDash, you can. We're about to have a DoorDash conversation.
Uh oh, here we go.
Tell who's like embraced the DoorDash and who hasn't. Uh-huh. Because like some of them have like special bags and special containers that like don't like. If you order French fries, they don't get all soggy and icky. And so you can tell, like...
Oh, the guys who vent the good DoorDashers. Yeah. The ones who vent the packaging. I got them like, oh, you guys are great.
Yeah. You order from, like, a Red Robin or a Chili's. Like, they have their shit on point. They have special containers so that your food is as fresh as possible when it gets to you. But when you order, like, Chinese, it's all in that plastic container, just, like, steaming inside. Not the same.
No, I agree. I really appreciate the restaurants who know how to package their food.
You also paid $35 for that orange chicken, didn't you?
I tell you what, I'm always remarking to the wife that, we save about, $25-$30 just by going to the restaurant and eating there, including tip, because, all the different fees they tack on for delivery.
Yeah, well, and a restaurant won't set it in front of your screen door, so you can't open it without hitting your food or drinks.
I noticed that, too. They'll put it, like, right in front of my screen door, and I'm like, what? Why is this happening?
So I was really curious. Is this just them not realizing, or is this them being, jerks?
Passive-aggressive.
Yeah. I went out to Reddit and to the DoorDash, subreddit. They entirely do it on purpose. If they don't think your tip is good enough, if you just tip the minimum, or if for some reason they think your order was too small, so the tip isn't good enough, they will do that on purpose.
I love how everybody looks for a tip now. And I'm not the driver absolutely deserves a tip. But when I order a pizza and go and pick it up, why am I tipping you?
Right.
And there'll be a place, here, sir, did you want to add a tip? And, particularly when they have you, when it's paperless and they turn the thing around, did you want to add a tip? And I'm like, no, I paid you for a service and I came to pick it up. You're not really doing anything extra here.
Yeah, I get even more frustrated at places like, let's say, Panera.
Uh-huh.
If you're going through the checkout and it will ask you if you want to add a tip or something.
On the self-checkout.
Yeah.
That's some bullshit. Right. That is some bullshit.
Well, they're like, it's going to be distributed to the associates. And I'm like, that's what you're supposed to pay them for.
That's right.
That's right. This is old guy cast with Aaron and Polly.
I am all about tipping when I've received, you know, service, right? I mean, like waiter, waitress, you know, that kind of thing. An Uber driver, a cab driver, you know, I am all about tipping in those circumstances. But tipping when, you know, they just hand something to you versus, you know, having it delivered or, you know, provided any kind of service. Also tipping before the service is complete, right? I mean, because you don't know how that's going to go yet. You know, the service should be dependent on performance, not on, well, I hope everything comes out great. I'm optimistic about this encounter. You know, I hate that.
That's the tip to get good service, not the tip for service.
It's blackmail is what it is. You're gonna get spit pizza if you don't give me a tip.
Yeah, that's your leaving the food in front of the front door, like Wayne just said.
That's right.
I'm shocked to hear that. Now I'm gonna be like, now instead of opening the door and saying thank you as they drive off, I'm just gonna be like, fuck you.
Flip them off as they drive away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know better.
I have looked up and given them the disgusting look before when I'm struggling to get out the door because it's right in front of the screen door.
The worst is when like UPS does it. So because I know that's not because of the tip, but sometimes UPS will do that shit. And I'm like, this is like heavy. I'm going to have to knock it over to open my front door or go out the garage.
You know, UPS is really bad about like when I order dog food. You know, and I've got three dogs, so I'll order the great big, you know, 50-pound bag of dog food. And a lot of times it's two bags, you know, just so that we don't have to do this again anytime soon. And they'll put it right in front of the door so you cannot get out of the house. And you're like, God dang it. You know, I've got double doors. Put it against the other door, you know.
See, I've been grateful because I do Amazon for dog food.
Mm-hmm.
I have a subscription, so I never have to go out and manually choose to order it for the dog food, the cat food, the kaler, all that. My Amazon drivers have been incredible lately. Like, they don't just leave stuff out. They'll even, like, I have a bench on the porch. They'll hide the stuff under the bench. It's in the picture. So, like, nobody in the porch pirates can't come up and see there's a big Amazon package or box.
Yeah.
And also, if it, like, rains, it'll be covered by the bench and... I really appreciate. I don't know why they just suddenly started doing it, but I've been happy about that.
I feel like we are within spitting distance of Amazon asking for tips for deliveries.
It's gonna happen.
I feel like it's gonna happen. I hope not, but it feels like that's the direction.
Now, are any of you guys who have given Amazon the code to your garage door so that they can slip packages in under it?
Nope.
I have not.
When we bought the new house and I had the garage door guy out to tune up the garage doors and, you know, reprogram them, he's like, did you want me to set it up for Amazon? I said, what is that? And he's like, that's where, you know, Amazon gets a code and it opens up your garage door halfway for them to, you know, be able to slide packages in. I'm like, good God, no, I don't want to do that. Why would anyone do that? That just seems so ridiculously unsafe.
I mean, places where they get stolen a lot, you know, that'd be the place. Like if your Amazon's constantly getting robbed off your front porch, that would be the only thing that might drive me to do that.
I've never had a garage, so.
Yeah.
You should get one. They're great.
I imagine they would be. I've always wanted a garage. So we had a carport growing up, but no garage.
So this is just a long way of telling everyone that we've started a Patreon, and if you want to tip us
for
the rest of this episode
and a GoFundMe to get Wayne a garage.
Yeah, to get Wayne a garage. So if you want to hear the rest of this episode, go to
and welcome to Old Man Cast with
him. Yeah, right. If you want to hear a review of Star Wars Skeleton Crew, insert money now.
Click here for more.
Yeah. Or like in the olden days, like when you're on a collect call, like continue this call, insert $1.25 now.
There you go.
Beep, 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 beep.
I like it.
Yeah. Anyway, so Star Wars with Aaron and Polly, I just checked and we have not been on the mics for a Star Wars specific podcast since The Acolyte.
Whoa. That sounds right.
Yeah. I mean, not that much has come out since then, right? I mean, it's been, you know, I think one of the things that I'm seeing articles online now that are literally just saying, Disney, please stop announcing Star Wars movie projects and actually make one.
That's fair. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, there's so many Star Wars movie projects supposedly in the works, but the only one we know that's actually filming is The Mandalorian and Grogu. But there is, you know, there's supposed to be, I mean, they just keep announcing there's like, I don't know, there's the Taika Waititi movie. There's like, I think they announced a new trilogy from, the Rian Johnson trilogy, which is probably going nowhere. The Kevin Feige Star Wars movie that got canceled. There's Simon Kinberg's Star Wars trilogy, which they say is maybe Star Wars episodes 10, 11, and 12. There's the Rogue Squadron movie. There's the new Rey movie. There's James Mangold's Dawn of the Jedi movie. There's, you know, and then there's Dave Filoni's, you know, conclusion to the, you know, the whole Mandalorian. I don't know if that's the same as the Mandalorian and Grogu or something different, but, you know, Dave Filoni is supposedly doing a Star Wars movie that, you know, we've talked about, maybe Heir to the Empire. But none of them are in front of cameras yet, except the Mandalorian and Grogu, which I think it's actually done filming now.
Well, and I think the Rey movie is supposed to start filming first quarter of next year.
Yeah.
Because I saw something with Daisy Ridley, and she was talking about that.
But, you know, I think they're saying, you know, you've announced like probably 20 movies. Can you make one?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I got to say, I agree. You know, I think I was actually seeing something kind of interesting. James Gunn the other day was talking about the quality of superhero movies in recent times. And James Gunn, you know, for all intents and purposes, is still producing good superhero movies. Like Guardians of the Galaxy 3 was good. We haven't seen Superman. I'd imagine we'll get a trailer probably later this month when Mufasa comes out.
The Suicide Squad was good.
Yeah. Oh, Suicide Squad was good. You know, like he has produced good superhero movies, and he has said that the, you know, the current state of superhero movies is such that they have, you know, they announce a property and a date before they have a story, and so they confine themselves to produce a movie by the time, you know, the announcement, you know, the announced target date, and, you know, that stories and special effects and all that are suffering as a result. And I would agree with that.
Well, you know, think about movies that, you know, were in that circumstance where they had a committed release date before they had a script, right? Mm-hmm. You know, Star Trek II, Star Trek the Motion Picture, both were in situations like that. The difference is that, you know, Star Trek II had a real vision to it. Like they at least had a finished script before they went to camera, whereas Star Trek the Motion Picture did not. They were writing it as they were shooting it.
I think the film that's produced, you know, via, you know, to a specific deadline, you know, the film that's produced that, you know, is in this situation, right, that they announced it before they even had a script in place, that actually ends up being good, is probably the exception more than the rule.
Oh, I completely agree. Yeah. Completely agree.
Well, and I watch a YouTube channel that's visual effects people. And one of the things they talked about is why are visual effects so bad lately in some of these movies? And that answer is the time.
Right.
They even showed what, taking the same scene, what they could do with visual effects with 2 hours, then 2 days, then a week. Mm-hmm. And how long it actually takes to do some of this stuff, to render it, to make it look good, to redo it. And they're just not giving the visual effects people time to finish this stuff.
I think another great example is Star Trek, the season finale of Picard, first season. You know, they wanted this whole fleet of Starfleet ships on the screen, but they only had time to render one ship. And so you had, you know, 100 different versions of the same ship, and it just looked stupid on screen. Like that's the only kind of ship Starfleet knows how to make anymore. And, you know, they owned it. I mean, they said it after, you know, when it came out. Yeah, we didn't have a whole lot of time. I mean, a whole lot of time or a whole lot of money. But, you know, that was the same issue with Quantumania. You know, they talked, you know, a lot after that movie came out about how they didn't get to spend near enough time with the special effects because that movie was so effects heavy.
Yeah. You know, it's Quantumania, the special effects on that were so bad. You know, I'm hopeful for the future of Star Wars, but, you know, I honestly think The Mandalorian and Grogu is going to be great. Like it's Jon Favreau is actually directing it. I think that'll be a great movie. I think that they I think that that one is a little bit of a different scenario, right? I think that one was, they had scripts, they had an intent, they had a story. It was supposed to be the next season of Mandalorian. And, you know, Lucasfilm saw an opportunity to say, hey, let's pivot on this. And you know, they pivoted and made it a movie instead. You know, yeah, probably trimmed out the fat of that season, of what they had intended for the season, and just produced a movie instead.
Yeah, where I have faith in it is that, or at least hope, is that he's involved.
Is it a new hope?
Yeah, it's because he's involved in it. When I look at the TV series, even the ones I wasn't interested in have been better than I expected. And the only one that really let me down and I disliked it was Boba Fett.
Yeah. Well, let's talk. I mean, so that brings us to the latest Star Wars project, which is Star Wars Skeleton Crew. So it is produced by Jon Favreau and Dave Filoni. It is actually a project that writer duo John Watts and Christopher Ford, if you're not familiar with them, you know, they are the duo behind Star Wars, the first three Spider-Man movies. So John Watts directed Spider-Man Homecoming, No Way Home, Far From Home and No Way Home. And Christopher Ford is, you know, kind of just his writing partner. But they also brought in, you know, just like these shows do, a murderer's row of directors to support on each episode. But they brought their vision to Jon Favreau and Dave Filoni, and, you know, that they sold them on the idea, and Jon Favreau and Dave Filoni, you know, found a way to incorporate it into the timeline that they've been playing in, which is post Return of the Jedi. You know, there are some references to the New Republic, so this is very similar time frame to the Mandalorian. And so that with that comes our latest Star Wars show. The first two episodes dropped this week. Like we've said, always an indicator that not much happens in the first episode. But what did you guys think? Why don't you start us off, Aaron? Yield to someone else.
Can I just say that I was not wild about watching this. In fact, when I saw the trailers, I was like, this looks terrible. I was kind of reconciled that I don't think I'm going to watch this. And then Paul sends out a note like, hey, Skeleton Crew for Saturday, right?
Likewise, that was the only reason I watched it this week. I was not planning on watching it.
Yeah,
same. You're welcome, Kathleen Kennedy. You're welcome.
And, you know, what I didn't find appealing is that it just looked like Star Wars babies, you know, in the trailer that I saw. And I got to say, I really enjoyed episode one, really enjoyed episode two. I am in. I loved the vision of Star Wars suburbs and Star Wars gated community. I feel like Ad Adden is a member of an HOA. I think their entire, you know, structure is an HOA. I very much liked the turning the New Republic on its head, and, you know, we're all part of the same community. It felt very big brothery to me.
Even more than that, when I watched it, I just kept saying, okay, so this planet's a cult.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
I did not get that vibe until the second episode, because
it's a compound.
What's interesting about the first episode is, and I'm going to say the same thing as you guys, I had intended to watch it. It's Star Wars. Of course I'm going to watch it, but the commercials or the trailers really put me off.
Yeah.
I'm like, Star Wars in the suburbs just doesn't feel like Star Wars to me, but, you know, neither did Andor at first either. I'm like, Star Wars, you know, like corporate espionage, you know, didn't feel right to me either, but they found a way to bring that Star Wars feel to it.
Well, and I feel like they very successfully captured that Steven Spielberg E.T. the Extraterrestrial vibe with childish wonder, you know. I loved the very 1980s feel of these kids not being properly supervised.
Yes.
Well, and there was I was watching it, and it's like, this doesn't make sense. This doesn't make sense until you get into the second episode and find out their planet is a missing planet. It's like, yeah, oh,
it's like a fantasy planet. It's like El Dorado. It's
Brigadoon. Yeah.
Okay, they really are a cult planet, just like I thought. That's why they're so much different than the rest of the, you know, the galaxy, is because they're still living on Old Republic lifestyle.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the dad, clearly there's more to the dad than meets the eye.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, and the droids are all bad news. but, you know, it was a lot of fun watching them on their hover bikes, you know, dirt biking around the trails and whatnot. It felt very reminiscent of, you know, a bygone age of the 1980s, you know, growing up unsupervised. I thought it was you knew that was Jude Law under the helmet in the first episode, in the open of the first episode. But it was nice that they slow rolled his intro into episode two. I thought they did that really nicely, as opposed to going, come on, don't tell me Jude Law stars in this and you're not going to give him to me until episode three. Right. I thought it was very artfully done. And I don't hate the kids. I thought they did a great job casting. I usually can't stand child actors.
Well, my favorite kid is the elephant kid. To your point, you know, it's kind of like they very much said they wanted to evoke the feeling of like Amblin films of the 80s, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Goonies and stuff like that. Goonies,
yeah.
And you do get that vibe in the kids, and you know, usually kids in the context of adults, you know, like a show that you watch that, or a movie that you watch that features adults, and then there's kids in it. Usually, those kids are annoying as shit.
Yeah.
But I think what helps is in the context of kids, only kids, like, you know, they're not, none of these kids are annoying. They're all relatively endearing. They're pretty decent kids, you know, just mischievous and you know, in questioning, you know, just like you would expect from an Amblin movie. And one of them's like a little elephant boy, and he's pretty awesome. I don't even know his name. Like, what is he? He's Neil is his name. An unidentified alien like an unidentified elephant like alien boy is Neil is how he's described in Wikipedia. But I love his character. I love his emotion, his little emotive elephant.
I got a real kick out of him at the starport, looking around at all the different, you know, life forms. He's like, look, aliens. Like, buddy, check your privilege.
I am shocked to hear you guys say this.
Because Andrew hated it. I could tell. He's like, let's tear apart Skeleton Crew. I was like, oh, Andrew's going to hate it.
we all have our preferences, but I found this just to be the most slowly paced, unengaging, boring two episodes of Star Wars TV I've watched. And that includes The Book of Boba Fett.
Wow. Ooh. Hot take, Andrew.
Yeah.
I mean, you spend, almost an hour in the first episode wandering around, you know, the local neighborhood, arguing with your classmates about whether you're getting in trouble or not, spending some time outside the principal's office. And then, you know, at the very, very end, sure, you unearth a spaceship and take off. The best part about this show is SM 33, you know, voiced by Nick Frost. That is the only part of this show that I've enjoyed so far. I'm a purist. I'll watch everything, but I hope it'll get better, but no, I did not care. It was a struggle for me to get through the first two episodes.
Wow. Cause I went in expecting to dislike it, and I was shocked by how much I was enjoying it. I did have some thought of this is taking an awful long time to get into space, but I liked learning the characters and seeing, we see different sides of the characters, the girls, the pod racers. You see them one way at first, but then as they start to interact, they have different sides to them that I enjoyed.
It has not been for me so far. I hope it improves though.
No, I get that. You know, for me, I think I really enjoyed it. I went in with low expectations. I really did enjoy the look and feel and characters. So I'm hopeful, but you know, I've said, quite frankly, I say this about most shows. And I would say this is very true of all the Star Wars shows except maybe Mandalorian season one. All of them could probably be done with two less episodes, at least, right? Anyone who's listened to Star Trek, if they're in Apollo, knows I said that about the whole final season of Picard, which I loved. You know, that I feel like, you know, the kind of going back to our earlier conversation, the fact that they are beholden to a specific structure of it has to be 6 or 8 episodes, or, you know, not, you know, it used to be 22, then it turned to 13, then it turned to 8. You know, now we're somewhere between 6 and 8. I'm assuming this is probably, you know, probably going to be the same length. You know, it could probably be done fine in 3 to 4 episodes to trim out the fat, but I did enjoy it. And I think it doesn't matter as long as there's not too much filler. I think, you know, to Andrew's point, there was a little bit like, okay, or Wayne's point. Okay, when are we going to start the story? But I enjoyed like the characters.
It
was long
at all. It didn't. Yeah. I just, you know, mileage definitely varies here. It did not feel an overly long first episode. In fact, when I finished the first episode, I was like, wow, you know, usually when they drop 2, the first episode's really weak, and I didn't find the episode weak at all. I felt like it set the table nicely.
I actually agree with you on that. I do find that this didn't actually need both episodes to be released. I think it was done just to make sure that they got some Jude Law. Out to the, you know, to the masses, given that's how they advertised it.
Yeah,
I think it did need the second episode, not because the first wasn't good, but because the rest of the show is going to feel nothing like the first episode. And so if they want to catch people, they needed that second episode, getting them into space, because otherwise it's not really selling what the show is.
Yeah. And I just looked, and this is going to be 8 episodes, this series.
You know, I would like them, you know, we were talking earlier about all the projects they're working on. I'd love to see them do a series or a movie of an adaptation of the, Joel Schreiber novel, Death Trooper.
Yes. Oh, I like Death Troopers, yeah.
I would like to.
You know, there was a reference to it in the episode, though, wasn't there? In the first episode, there was a reference to zombies or something like that.
Yes.
Yeah. But it was something like the way they described.
Farn was just describing the, you know, all the dead guys inside, and you can still hear them.
Yeah, there was something. Yeah, was something that was like very similar to this description of how the stormtroopers came back to life and Death Troopers. I'm like, that feels like a little inside joke that maybe I got, maybe I got it wrong. But Death Troopers is. I mean, I don't know that we'll ever see it in live action, but I would love to see it animated at least.
Yeah, I'd be down for that too, and I'm in for the rest of this show. So
I mean, I'm going to reluctantly watch, but it's definitely going to be lower on my watch list each week. You know, right now, because maybe it's just by comparison, because my wife and I are currently working, just finished actually season 2 of The Diplomat on Netflix. Oh my God, that show is amazing.
Have not watched season 2 yet. I watched season 1. We just haven't gotten to it.
So good. I'm not going to spoil anything, Aaron, but season 2 is so good.
Good.
Well, I just finished The Penguin.
The Penguin?
Penguin.
I thought it was okay. I thought it was good. I mean, I think it's a little bit overrated because everyone's like, oh, it's the next Sopranos. I thought it was good. You know, you know, would I see a season 2? Probably. Is it appointment television for me? No. But, you know, I also thought that the Robert Pattinson Batman was also pretty good. Like, you know, so that universe is, you know, for me, that universe is not different enough than the Christopher Nolan universe for me to feel like I'm watching something new. So, you know, even though Colin Farrell and the actors all do a great job in Penguin, I thought it was just okay. I've picked up Lioness and Landman, both on Paramount Plus, and I am just gobbling those up. Those are just so well acted and fun. Dark fun, but like just well written shows that I'm enjoying both of those.
I'm so far behind on my premium television. I mean, I haven't watched season 2 of Tulsa King yet.
I have not watched season 2 of Tulsa King yet.
I haven't watched season 2 of Lioness yet. Haven't watched season 2 of Diplomat yet. I did start, Dune Prophecy on Max?
I've heard that is not good.
Oh, my God. I loved the first episode.
Yeah, I've heard the opposite. I've heard only good things about it.
First episode was boring. Really good.
Oh, I've heard about that, what Andrew says about Skeleton Crew.
Is it a little dry?
It's a little dry. Like the desert. Spice.
Is Dune Prophecy in any way connected to the current Dune films? I know it's set it's way, 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 way before the events of the Dune films, but
I would say that it is as connected to the current Dune films as much as the Dune prequels are connected to the, you know, original Dune novel. And I will say that this, you know, links nicely into the prequels universe. I was like, oh, okay, now I know where we are.
Okay. All right.
You know.
So. Well, I have Lioness on my list to watch as well, so I'm glad.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Lioness is – I really recommend it. It
really first season was great. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And second season's even better.
Good deal.
I will have some time off in December, so I'm thinking it's about time to do my – subscribe to Max for a month and watch a few things.
Yeah.
But I want to wait until all of Creature Commandos are out.
I have not started that.
I forgot about it last night after I got done watching Skeleton Crew. I'll catch it tonight.
We'll talk about it in our next episode.
I've been hearing really good things about it, so I want to be able to binge it.
And I got to tell you, that came out of the – I mean, I knew it was coming. I didn't realize it was coming this soon. I was surprised that it hit when it did. And I know that's probably just because I'm not following the news as much on that. But I just, for some reason in my head, it was after the first of the year.
I didn't realize it was an animated series. I thought it was going to be an animated movie.
Every Thursday. But the first two episodes are released now.
Very good. Well, hey, we want to know what you thought about Star Wars The Skeleton Crew. Give us a shout at ideologyofmadness@gmail.com. If we use your comments on the show, you can win a coveted valuable Ideology of Madness surprise. And Paul, maybe I'm wrong. You can clean me up here, but I would imagine we would continue the conversation in our ongoing Funny Books franchise.
Yeah, I don't think there's enough meat on the bone here necessarily to have dedicated episodes beyond these first two. So, you know, if you are listening to this via our Star Wars with Aaron and Polly feed, make sure to go on over to Funny Books with Aaron and Polly and hit the subscribe button there, because future episodes we will be discussing there. But also, you can give us feedback on our social medias, IOM Geek on Facebook, Instagram, and X.
What a deal. Well, hey, we're gonna get in there for episode 3 next week, plus talk about all the comic things and probably talk about some Creature Commandos. It's going to be a huge week. Plus, guys, here we are in December, mid-December. By the time most people listen to this episode, that only can mean that the 15th annual Funny Book Awards are right around the freaking corner.
Start planning for your favorite cover of the year now.
Woohoo! I love how that's always aimed right at Tim, just square in the crosshairs. All right, guys, you have a good one.
You too.
Yeah. Bye.